former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire, creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, folks. It's good to be back here in the Studio 4 in the basement of the beautiful Ice House building in the Midtown Kansas City. You know, there's a lot of crimes that happen close by around here, Aaron. Did you know that? Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
Did you know that we're sitting right in the middle of where a lot of crimes happen, especially back in the 30s and 40s? We got a upcoming, we're going to do another one of our dramatic readings about a guy named John Lazia who was killed just a few blocks from here. And there were several other of those mob hits. And actually, even closer at Armor and Broadway, which is, what, two blocks from here, three blocks from here, it was Mr. O'Brien's where Sonny Bowen was killed in the 1970s. That was one of the last, wasn't the last mob hit, but it was one of the later mob hits when they, after, before they quit having mob hits in Kansas City. Did you ever go? You weren't old enough. You weren't around here.
Yeah, I wasn't really.
You weren't around here with Mr. O'Brien's. I used to drink at Mr. O'Brien's once in a while.
On Broadway?
They had a book in there. Yeah, down on Broadway. It's right there at Armour and Broadway. They had a book going in there. Actually, we had a little investigation. We had a police employee who was making bets down there. We figured it out, and we kind of halfway proved it. We didn't really go after him big time, but we took him aside and said, you know, you can't do that, dude. You got to figure something else out, but you can't go around one of these mob places and make sports bet. He was like a civilian employee that worked. I'm not sure. I can't remember where he worked.
But they're going to get their hooks in him.
That's the problem. There's a problem. And he wasn't really in any position to do much. He was monitored pretty close from then on, I'll tell you that.
I noticed tonight you rode your motorcycle to the studio, Gary.
Yeah, Aaron, you know, I'd ride that thing anytime I can, all the way up to maybe 40, 35, 40 degrees. Aaron, you know, that is motorcycle is the fastest thing I've ever been on. And I got it up to 120 mile an hour. There's a special stretch of road up there. It's a little known fact about me, folks. I go out and break the traffic laws every once in a while. And I have to watch out for the cops because they might not give me a break if they caught me doing 120 mile an hour in a 55. Because there's a stretch of I-435 up north. And it's like a mile long. You can see all the way up, so you can tell there's no radar. And I lay into that baby, and I get up about 120, and I start getting nervous. But I'm going to keep going. I want to see just how fast it'll go. It's amazing how fast it'll go.
I don't know. 120 miles an hour still would be pretty scary. How do you get that kind of performance out of the bike?
Well, you know, I put some high-performance parts on it, and I've got a good guy, a former wheelman or motorcycle policeman that works on it for me. I'm not that mechanical anymore myself, plus they're so sophisticated. But one thing he did do and he suggested to me was a kind of a high-performance air filter. He pointed out that there's a company called K&N Automotive. They have a great air filter, and it's the last air filter you'll ever have to buy, he told me, because you just take it out about every 40,000 miles and wash it.
I'm going to do a Google search here, and I find that K&N Engineering is in Riverside, California. It says they're the world's leading manufacturer of washable performance air filters and air intake systems. You've got a Kawasaki?
Yeah, and they've got it. They've got it. We've been using K&N oil filters, which are kind of a high-end oil filter. I wanted to make sure that oil's good and clean all the time. And we were talking about the air filter because the air intake's really important for the performance to get that speed out of it. And he said he would get me at, and when we got up to 40,000, we're about 38,000 now. When I get up to 40,000, he's going to put a K&N air filter on it.
It says here they've got a million-mile limited warranty. Are you going to ride the bike that long?
No, I don't think so. I probably won't last that long. You know, next week, Aaron, I'm going to report. I'm going to get that thing over 120 mile an hour. I always get a little bit nervous at 120. I'll let you know. I'll get back to you on that. Anyhow, our story tonight is not about Kansas City. We're moving. We've been to Chicago. We've done some stuff about Las Vegas, always with the Kansas City connection, it seems like. Now we're going back to New York City, and really no direct Kansas City connection that I know of. We're going to talk about one of the more famous mob hits and one of the more famous mob people because of the way he was hit. It just grabbed the country's attention at the time, and that's Albert Anastasia. He was born Umberto Anastasio, September 26, 1902. And he was one of the most ruthless and feared Cosa Nostra mobsters in the United States. He was really kind of a founder of the American Mafia. He ran Murder Incorporated, what became known as Murder Incorporated, during the pre-war era, and was boss of the modern Gambino crime family during most of the 1950s.
Which was in New York City.
In New York City. He was the guy, Aaron, you've seen the images, that was killed while he was getting a haircut. He was killed in the barber chair. Everybody's seen that image of Albert Anastasio's Anastasia. Now, I've said his name right, or the original way it was spelled. The image of Albert Anastasia laying dead on the floor with the barber chairs all around. It was. But
they didn't hit the barber.
They didn't hit the barber. It was they went in and got him while his face was covered up. You know how they cover your face with a cloth,
with a hot towel.
With a hot towel.
I never get that done anymore after that. I said no more hot towel for me.
Really, a guy like that, I'd think he'd be a little bit afraid of having a barber holding a razor to his throat. But I guess he trusted the barber. But
maybe not enough.
The barber might have ratted him out. No, it would be. It'd be easy. You know, a guy gets a haircut regularly someplace, somebody like that. Why, you just have to wait until the next time he's in there and walk up and pop him when he gets underneath that hot towel.
Which is what happened.
Which is exactly what happened. It grabbed everybody in the United States' attention. It was on the front page of every paper. As a little kid, I was about 10 years old when this happened, 12 years old, and I remember it happening. I remember the images. It was a huge deal. He was from Tropea, Calabria, Italy, which is Calabria is like a state in Italy, and it's one of the southernmost states, right across the channel from Sicily. So most of these guys are from Sicily, but if you're not from Sicily, you're probably from the south of Italy. You know, that's like southern Italian food, lasagna and all the food we mainly have is from southern Italy or Sicily. The northern Italian food's different. They won't have the red sauces so much. They'll have white sauces, and now, you know, when you get into veal and things like that, that would be more northern Italian. Yeah, southern Italian is a heavy red sauces.
Now, Albert was born in September 26th of 1902. He was born there in Italy, and his parents were Raffaello Anastasio. The family name was Anastasio, but Albert started using Anastasia in 1921.
When he was in the United States. Now, in 1919, Anastasia and his three brothers were working on a freighter, and when they got to New York City, they jumped ship and just stayed in the United States, and they started working as longshoremen on the Brooklyn waterfront. By March of 1921, Albert Anastasia was convicted of his first murder. He killed a longshoreman named George Torino as a result of a quarrel. He was sentenced to death and sent to Sing Sing. We've all heard of Sing Sing and the gas chamber or the electric chair in Sing Sing, which is in Ossining, New York. I guess that's some derivative of Ossining. They started calling it Sing Sing. Due to a legal technicality, he got a retrial in 1922. Well, by this time, I think he was connected by this time, because four of the original prosecution witnesses had disappeared in the meantime, and he was released from custody in 1922. 1923, he's convicted of illegal possession of a firearm, and he gets 2 years in the city jail.
Well, he was committing crimes with his brothers, right?
Oh, I'm sure he was. You know, they came on and working as longshoremen, and they were all toughs, and they probably were moving up in the union, and stealing and doing all kinds of things. And this is a result of a quarrel, but I bet this quarrel with this other longshoreman was probably over some kind of money thing, some kind of illegal gain they were stealing off the ships and off the docks. He was probably involved with that. And by then, he had to be involved with an organization, or maybe his brothers are the ones that killed the original prosecution witnesses or made them disappear. But somebody made them disappear.
Because he was actually still locked up until 1922?
From 21 to 22, he was locked up. He was only in for a year. Then he got locked up for 2 years in 1923. But he came back out by 19, probably... before
June
25, probably late in 24, he probably did a year, maybe 18 months, if he even did that. But by the late 1920s, he had become a top leader in the International Longshoremen's Association, or the ILA, and they control 6 union local chapters in Brooklyn. He had allied himself with Giuseppe Joe the Boss Masseria, who was the kind of the mob boss or a powerful gang leader in Brooklyn at that point in time. He also became close associates with many other up-and-coming mafia guys or La Cosa Nostra guys, Joe Adnois, Charlie Lucky Luciano, Vito Genovese, and Frank Costello. Remember, we had our man Bill Friedman on to talk about Frank Costello.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he thought he was quite a gentleman, but he was also, he will eventually rise to the head of this one of these mob families, and be associated with Anastasia most of his life. 1928, Anastasia is charged again with the murder in Brooklyn, but the witnesses disappeared, or they refused to testify. By 1930, there's something going on. There's Joe the Boss and another guy in Brooklyn or in New York City. This is the formation of the modern La Cosa Nostra, the 5 families in New York. This time, Joe Masseri, or Joe the Boss, and a guy named Salvatore Maranzano were pretty much the kind of the old line, old mustache Pete, old black handers that had risen to the top of 2 mafia factions in New York City.
More of the Sicilians that had really come over at the turn of the century.
Right.
Like 1900.
Yeah, what I call the old black handers, the people that had, you know, perpetuated the extortion of other Italian shopkeepers and Italian merchants, produce sellers and people like that with the black hand. They put the black hand on the extortion note, and hence they became known as the black handers. Well, by 1930, Lucky Luciano, he's kind of the smarter of all these guys, and he decides that he needs to move on up and take over all these organized crime rackets, but he's got to get rid of the old line mafia guys, the old mustache Pete's, being Joe the Boss, Masseria, and Salvatore Maranzano. He came up with a plot, and he brought Anastasia in with him, and also a guy named Benjamin Bugsley Siegel. Anastasia assured Luciano that he would kill anyone that Luciano wanted so he could get to the top. Anastasia knew that if Luciano ran what would be eventually become the National Crime Syndicate, he would be in for a piece of the action. So he threw his lot in with Luciano. See, he could have thrown his lot in and moved up a little bit with Masseria or Maranzano and ratted out Luciano to them and killed Luciano. He would have got it then, but he saw the future, and the future was what was known as the National Crime Syndicate. See, these old-time mafia guys, they would only deal with Italians, and the modern National Crime Syndicate brought in the Jewish gangsters, Bugsy Siegel and Mayor Lansky, Louis Lepke, and people like that, who
were otherwise Peckerwoods.
Were otherwise Peckerwoods or non-Italians, and they wouldn't really call them Peckerwoods because they were Jewish. They would just call them Jews. You're a Peckerwood if you're non-ethnic, shall we say.
Okay.
If you were Greek, you wouldn't be called a Peckerwood in this subculture.
But if you're Jewish.
You're Jewish.
Like Meyer Lansky.
Meyer Lansky, you would just be a Jew. But if you were a guy like me, whose family goes all the way back to England, you would be a Peckerwood. Or even an Irish. They probably would call Irish Peckerwoods more than likely. They would call... you know, Swedish and all the different Northern European nationalities, that's your ethnicity, you would be called a Peckerwood.
Was part of that because those diverse ethnic groups kind of clung to themselves, stayed together?
They had to.
So the Italians had their kind of organized crime element. The Jewish had their own kind of organized crime element, as the Irish did as well.
Right. And Greeks would have too, actually. And in St. Louis, there's a Syrian and Lebanese element of organized crime. All around the Mediterranean, it seems to me like. We've had Greek guys involved with the mob. So you go all around the Mediterranean, and you're going to find some element of this organized crime families that when they came to the United States, they clung together, and the young guys that got involved in crime, and then and that's what Luciano, he saw that was the future, rather than just maintain this for the Italians, let's bring the Jewish guys in, because they had certain expertise that ability to, you know, run the gambling and deal with numbers that a lot of those Italians didn't have. They'd be more likely to be educated and not quite. They could use the Italians just as brutes, but
as muscle.
But the Jews, I hate to put a stereotype on Jewish guys, but you know, they're pretty good with numbers, man. And so that was their part. We had the same thing in Kansas City. We had Max Jabin and Snag Klein, or Morris Klein. They were the kind of the Jewish connections to the Savella family out of the 40s and 50s, and they were involved with the gambling and the more sophisticated business things at the time, rather than the street muscle. Those were all Italians.
Well, but Lucky Luciano still had Giuseppe Joe the Boss Mazzaria standing in his way.
Yes, he did. So now what happens is a Castelmarese War. It's become known as the Castelmarese War. And I think that comes from an area that a lot of these guys were from over in Italy. Luciano wanted to use Anastasia and Bugsy Siegel to just kill these guys off. So on April 15th, 1931, Luciano lured Joe the Boss, or Joe Masseria, to a meeting at a Coney Island restaurant. This is out in Brooklyn. During their meal, Luciano, this is ripped from The Godfather, man. Luciano excused himself to go to the restroom. As soon as he was gone, Anastasia, Vito Genovese, Joe Adnoys, and Bugsy Siegel rushed into the dining room and shot Masseria to death. The war ended immediately, and for some reason they allowed Maranzano to be the winner. They allowed him to live, but then he had to reorganize New York's mafia into what became known now as the Five Families.
But part of that organization kept him in power. But
right.
Was this because Luciano had secretly given him support?
I would say so. I would guess that.
Because otherwise, wouldn't they just simply assassinate him as well?
Yeah, that was the original plan. But I think they decided, rather than let's bring him in and then elevate him, but he's got to elevate all of us. And that's when they created these Five Families, with Maranzano being the kind of bosses, if you will. Out of this, Anastasia became the underboss of the crime family of a guy named Vincent Magano, which became the modern-day Gambino crime family. Now, shortly thereafter, I think maybe our boy Lucky Luciano was just waiting. Because by September of 1931, just a few months later, Maranzano was murdered, and Luciano became the boss of bosses in the United States. Now, to avoid these kinds of power struggles and turf disputes in the future, see, Luciano was really much more sophisticated. That's when he established what became known as the National Crime Syndicate. Now, out of the crime syndicate, and which the Five Families in New York were involved in, they had the commission, and the commission were only La Cosa Nostra Italian mobsters, but the National Crime Syndicate, that's where you get room for Mayor Lansky and Bugsy Siegel and Louis Lepke and people like that. So these five families and the commission, the National Crime Syndicate and the commission, they were formed to solve disputes. They would carve up and distribute territories and regulate all the lucrative illegal activities such as gambling, bootlegging, and it was coming into the repeal of prohibition, so eventually it would be gambling. And they talk about racketeering. I think labor racketeering was a big one. They infiltrated all these mobs. They've already infiltrated the International Longshoremen's mobs, and they're going to start working on the Teamsters during this time because there's a huge amount of money in controlling labor unions. All the mafia families at some point or another have infiltrated some of the big labor unions out of the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Like the Longshoremen.
Like the Longshoremen. That was one of the first ones, the Longshoremen. If you've ever seen the movie Waterfront with Marlon Brando, plays his brother is, I think his name was Charlie. His brother is a mob boss who is involved in boxing, and he's also involved with the Longshoremen's Union. And you had to pay allegiance to them. You had to give them the money to make sure that you worked. Plus, the companies would kick back to the mob in order to keep labor problems down. The famous scene where he also was involved in boxing, and as a mobster, he decided in the gambling interest that his brother had to throw a fight one night. And his brother and Marlon Brando threw the fight, and that's the famous scene afterwards when Marlon Brando's feeling so, his character's feeling so bad, he told his brother, he said, Charlie, he said, I could have been a contender if you'd only let me. I could have been somebody. I could have been a contender. But that was a good example of mafia. These guys right here is infiltration of the International Longshoremen's Union. In 1932, Albert Anastasia is indicted for charges of murdering somebody with an ice pick. This case is dropped quickly due to lack of witnesses. This becomes a pattern. 1933, he's charged with killing the man who worked in the laundry. No witnesses to testify. I'm not sure why those killings. I'm sure they had something to do. You know, they might have owed loan sharks, or they were in some way impeding the...
Seems like pretty low-level guys to go guy working in a laundry and kill him. But.
It seems like it. There's more to it. You know, we don't know. I didn't go out and research every one of these crimes.
But they had either a lack of witnesses or they had witnesses who were unwilling to testify.
Right. Well, by 1933 and 1934, after Anastasia is obviously getting a reputation as a killer, Lucky Luciano sees this, and he places him and a guy named Louis Lepke Buchalter, who was a well-known labor racketeer, in control of the National Crime Syndicate's enforcement arm, which took on the name of Murder Incorporated. Now, it's my understanding, they didn't call themselves Murder Incorporated. That's more the press put that on them. But they were known among their peers as the Brownsville Boys. They were a group of Jewish and Italian killers who operated. They had a little headquarters at a place at a candy store called Midnight Roses, which was owned by another mobster, Louis Capone. And this was probably a relative of Al Capone's. You know, Al Capone was from these neighborhoods right here and was operating as a young criminal during this time, just before he went he got in trouble in Brooklyn and went to Chicago.
So the Midnight Rose is actually a candy store in a suburb of Brooklyn, yeah, known as Brownsville.
Brownsville. Probably an upscale, nice little place to live, like Park Slope today. You know, during the next 10 years, it's estimated by law enforcement that Murder Incorporated committed between 400 and 1,000 murders, most of which were never solved. Anastasia was nicknamed the Mad Hatter or the Lord High Executioner. Anastasia was nicknamed the Mad Hatter, or another nickname was the Lord High Executioner by his peers, and probably by the press, too. I'm always a little, it's hard to figure out whether this is a real moniker, a real nickname, or one the press dreamed up, just like this Murder Incorporated. I can't imagine these guys running around calling him the Lord High Executioner. Maybe behind his back, I don't know, he probably knew about it and smiled, but that's a pretty big mouthful to say.
Well, that's a lot of murders. I mean, 400 to 1,000.
It was a lot of murders.
You think that was all over basically just enforcement from their racketeering?
I would say so. Probably consolidating their power, and I don't know. You know, the labor unions, you probably would have people in the labor unions that you wanted to control that were resisting that.
And they would just disappear, and then they'd be like, well, we got to get another guy to run the labor board. Who wants to do it? And everyone's like,
not me.
Yeah.
This was during the time when they came out, like, you've seen in the movies where they take the guy and give him cement overshoes and throw him in the harbor there in Brooklyn. And all the modern-day images that you think of the mafia all were developed during this time, during the 30s and 40s.
Which seems to me, you know, like, okay, so that's the moniker of giving him the cement shoes, but doesn't anybody ever go and look?
You know, we had one found recently.
Wasn't there?
They found a skeleton with a big block of cement on his shoes just off of Manhattan. It washed up on the shore, I believe. But as it turned out, it was more of a modern-day Mexican guy. It was not an old-time Italian mobster, so who knows? It wasn't connected. I think it was connected up some kind of drug dealing. And, of course, that's the modern mafia, isn't it? The drug dealers, the modern racketeering is the drug dealing by organized crime, the Mexican mafia, and the different crime families that came out of that. In the next segment, we'll talk a little more about what Anastasia was doing more specifically during the 30s and on his rise to become a mob boss in New York City. He during the 30s, early 30s, he carried a business card that said he was a sales representative for the Convertible Mattress Corporation in Brooklyn.
Do we even know if that actually existed?
There probably was some kind of Convertible Mattress Corporation. And they probably, if you'd called up, they probably said, oh, yeah, Mr. Anastasia, yes, he works here. Well, no, he's not in right now. Can I take a message? Everybody needs a cover. All right, Aaron, I think we've about done it for this segment. We will come back with some more specific details on some of these murders that Albert Anastasia was involved with and Lucky Luciano and what happened to him.
But before we go, you should mention your favorite nonprofit.
Oh, yeah, my favorite nonprofit. If you have a friend, relative, or somebody you care about, coworker that has a problem with alcohol or drugs, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900. Or they have a website, www.firstcallkc.org. Or if you're not from Kansas City, you know, call them anyhow and ask about resources in your own area. Or go to their website. Google National Council on Alcohol and Drug Dependence, and you'll probably find something in your neighborhood. Find a nonprofit to get you some referrals.
And remember to download the Kansas City Mob Tour app for your iPhone and take the tour of notorious mob locations in and around Kansas City. You can watch Gangland Wire, the documentary. It's available for purchase or download on Amazon. And remember to make a donation and put a hit out on our donate button.
All right. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Music provided by Audomatic. Find them on Facebook at Audomatic Music.